Hello and welcome to the 21st episode of Mobile Podcast. Mobile Podcast gives you exclusive insights into the major public interest issues affecting the mobile telecommunications industry. I'm your host, Simon Clark, and in part one of this two-part edition, we'll speak with Professor Ray Kemp, Adjunct Professor of Risk and Sustainability from Swinburne University in Melbourne, Australia, about risk communication and its application to public health concerns about mobile phone technology. Professor Ray Kemp is an internationally recognised expert in the field of risk communication. Ray has recently been appointed as the next chair of the Radiation Health and Safety Advisory Council of ARPANSA, the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency. Ray's also been appointed by the UK Director General for Public Health to the UK Advisory Committee on Cancer of Chemicals in Foods, Consumer Products and the Environment. His specific role on the COC is to provide advice on risk communication for members of the public and other non-expert audiences. Professor Kemp has also worked with the GSMA and the MMF to produce a risk communication guide for mobile phones and base stations to provide practical guidance and support on good risk communications practice for people working in the mobile industry, especially those who are facing public concerns about radio signals. I spoke earlier with Professor Kemp in person about the new publication. Well, Ray, welcome to our program.
Hello, Simon. Nice to have the chance to talk to you about this important subject.
Indeed. Can we start, if we could, with the updated risk communication guide you've produced for the MMF and the GSMA? Who's the guide for, and how can it be used to address public concern about the safety of mobile technology?
Well, it's primarily targeted at people working in the mobile telecoms industry, both in terms of those working with mobile phone development, sales and so on, but I guess largely also with respect to people involved in deploying the networks, so people setting up new base stations or doing upgrades on buildings with new antenna and deploying the new technology. And these are the people that often get the difficult questions about is this safe? And that's what this is about, answering that question, is this safe?
So what are some of the key elements of good risk communication and how are they being employed by the mobile phone industry and by governments and health authorities?
Well, if you were to ask me as an academic what is risk communication, the answer generally is that risk communication is the meaningful of exchange of information between different parties about issues to do with health and safety. So meaningful exchange of information means that it's two-way. It's not just giving people information. Risk communication is about listening to people's concerns and answering those concerns with a view to understanding why they see things the way they do. So the key elements that are important for people that work in an industry like this, which is highly technical, is to remember that people don't use the same kind of terms and acronyms that people in the industry do. So it's important to listen to people's concerns. It's important to not think that just giving people the facts as you see them is going to resolve the issue. And I think it's important to think about the different ways in which you can allow that communication to occur. It might be around the barbecue, it might be in a telephone conversation, or it might be in the shop front. But all of those situations where people have concerns, you need to think about using these risk communication ideas and guidelines.
What are some of the communication mistakes that are commonly made when responding to public concern?
I think I'd like to point to two key mistakes. One is to think that just giving people factual information is going to resolve their concerns, because people in the industry think that knowing the facts is sufficient. And the second thing is not treating people with respect. If you don't treat people properly, respectfully, they're not going to listen to what you have to say anyway.
It's common, I think, for people to do that with a high level of technical knowledge, not understanding that people who don't have that knowledge still have fears that are real for them.
Yes, that's right. And it may well be that those fears are because they've read something in a local paper. It may be that they have somebody in their family who has not been well. It may be that they've seen something being developed very close to them but haven't been consulted about it. Or it may be that they've had a phone that hasn't worked properly and has been feeling a bit hot, and they're wondering whether that's going to have an effect on them as well. So people will be thinking about things not just in terms of what's written on a piece of paper, but they'll come with all kinds of other experiences and concerns to the table.
So knowing that those are the sort of responses that people might have, what would you say is the single most important step the mobile phone industry needs to take to improve its communication about possible risk?
Well, I think the number one issue is that you have to listen, first of all, to what the questions and concerns are, and you have to address those. And the other thing is that I think, as I've just alluded to, unless people have confidence in you that you're treating them fairly and openly and honestly, they're not going to listen to what you have to say anyway. So part of this is about behaving properly in the way you deal with people, not dismissing their concerns out of hand. And the other thing is, as I said, listening very carefully and responding to the things they put to you.
The International Agency for Research on Cancer's 2011 classification of radio frequency fields as possibly carcinogenic is a significant concern for some people. How can health authorities explain the uncertainty surrounding this classification?
Oh, now this is a really difficult topic, and it's really important to take this carefully and think it through carefully. Now, what happens is that the World Health Organization has a program of looking at all kinds of things in the environment. So there will be substances that we come across in our daily lives, or it may be jobs that people undertake, or it may be new products coming into production. And what they do is they look and see whether there's any evidence regarding whether those activities or materials may have an association with or may cause cancer. And over the years, they looked at something like 900 different products. And being scientists, they do this in a very rigorous manner. So they look at the studies in relation to effects on human health. They look at the numerous studies undertaken on the effects on animals in laboratories. And they will look at, in detail, what we know about the mechanisms by which chemicals, substances interact with cells and so on in the human body. And they'll look at all those substances in great detail. Now, when they do that, they also want to have a classification to say whether, you know, is this sufficient evidence or is this insufficient evidence? Is this good science or bad science? And systematically, IARC, this branch of the World Health Organization, uses established and internationally respected scientists to go through all of that evidence for these different substances. And over the years, I suppose they've become more careful in the way they do it, and the classification now is that they can classify substances as to whether they're, yes, they do cause cancer. And some substances we know, asbestos and so on, do definitely cause cancer in humans. And then there are others where the evidence is not quite complete. So sometimes we'll see evidence of things which it looks as though it probably does cause cancer, but it's not complete. And there'll be other evidence which is still uncertain. It could possibly cause cancer. And then there'll be other substances where all of the evidence is just uncertain and you can't say one way or the other. And I guess finally there's this situation where the scientists can look at the information and say this definitely doesn't cause cancer. Now, you know, people listening might be interested to know that of the 900 substances looked at by the WHO, only one was found not to cause cancer. So the rest of the substances then, they have to classify, are they probable or possible or definite? Now, in the overall classification, what they call a 2B is that they have some evidence of an association. It could possibly cause cancer, but it's not definite. It's not confirmed. And that is where RF from mobile phones was classified by the agency. Now, to people who don't understand that process particularly well and just read the headline, RF can possibly cause cancer, that can be quite alarming. But when you actually put it in context and think, well, what they said was this could possibly cause cancer, but what they were also saying was this result might just be an artifact of the experiments. The experiments are not completely confirmed. We don't have enough evidence to even say that it probably causes cancer. So I think you have to put it in context that this substance, RF from mobile phones, is something that we have to treat carefully. We have to have standards to control the way people are exposed to it. But it's not something that we should immediately be very worried about and have heightened concerns and start making major changes to the way society is using mobile telephony.
So would it be oversimplifying the case to say there's a spectrum of views and conclusions about things that might cause cancer, and in this case, we're at the lower risk end of that spectrum?
Yes, that's one way of looking at it. The problem we have with the risk communication field is that how people interpret that classification depends on their perceptions of the risk. For them, what is acceptable and what isn't. Now, the interesting thing about mobile phones and mobile telephony is that most people are very happy to have a mobile phone and don't really think too much about the RF, the emissions from the phone. They're happy to use the technology, they see the benefits, they want the latest version. And we have good systems in place to make sure that all of those phones meet the required standards and you know, are good, safe technologies. But people have a very different view about base stations. They get concerned about the base stations that maybe these are causing a risk to them. Now, the difference is from a risk communication, risk perception point of view is that people have choice over when and how to use a phone, but they don't necessarily have much choice over where the base station goes, how close it is to their home, to the school, and so on. And that's where the perceptions of the risk start to hit home, and that's where the industry has to be very careful in the way that it explains these issues to people and the way it engages with people around those citing issues.
So that helps to explain why there can be different sorts of responses to the risks that people perceive base stations and antenna installations could cause. I mean, some communities become very concerned and very angry, some not so. Is it a matter that some sites do cause more concern, and how the industry might better identify those that will cause concern?
Yes, I think the first point to say is that facts and information don't generate behaviour. Perceptions cause behaviour. So we need to understand the perceptions in order to be able to see why people are responding the way they are. Now, what we're seeing in different countries around the world is that the industry does behave differently in the way that it approaches communities in establishing base stations in their area. And in certain parts of Europe, the reaction to the deployment of base stations has been very harsh. In other countries, it's been much smoother of late. And my understanding of that is that industry should not be afraid of engaging with people early in this process. The greater you engage with people and explain what you want to do, and the earlier you do it, the less there is likely to be an antipathetic reaction. If you leave it to the last minute or don't engage with people, that's where you'll get an angry reaction.
And what level or what is the balance between fact and perception that needs to be addressed in those circumstances?
Oh, look, you have to provide all of the facts. You have to be as transparent as you possibly can and provide people with access to all of the information they need. But in doing so, I think it's very important that you also give people some confidence that when you point them in particular directions or explain how the technology works to them, you're doing that in an objective and an open and a trustworthy way.
Indeed, but there will be people who have such concerns that there's a risk to their own health or maybe to their children's health that they want to guarantee that the installation is going to be safe in that context. How would you suggest responding to such a request for a guarantee?
Oh, look, people are probably aware of the old adage that there are three guarantees in life, which are birth, taxes, and death, or some variation of that. From a scientific point of view, what we know about risk is it's almost impossible to say that anything is absolutely safe in life, and no respected or competent safety advisor would say that something is 100% safe. So guarantees are things that politicians give. What people in the industry should be doing is saying, we can give you the assurance that we will meet all the relevant safety standards. The guarantee you can give, if you like, is that we will comply with all of the relevant health guidance and the health standards. And if those health standards or guidance change, we'll comply with those as well. But it's not reasonable for people to want a guarantee of absolute safety. That's not possible in any walk of life.
Ray, we'll have to leave it there for this edition, but we'll continue our discussion in the next episode. Thanks so much for your time today. It's been a really interesting discussion. Mobile Podcast would like to thank Professor Ray Kemp for taking his time to appear on the program. We'd also like to thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed the 21st episode produced in December 2013. Stay tuned for the second part of our interview in episode 22.
Mobile Podcast is made available for download by the Mobile Manufacturers Forum and the GSM Association. The information contained on this podcast is provided for general information purposes only and does not purport to offer legal, health, or any other professional advice. Where reference is made to a company or a specific commercial product or service, howsoever referred, no endorsement or recommendation is implied or intended. The views expressed are those of the speaker alone and do not necessarily represent those of the Mobile Manufacturers Forum or the GSM Association. All guests have volunteered their time to help promote an open discussion of the issues addressed.